Good morning or afternoon or evening, depending on when you listen to this podcast. It is Football 52, episode 14. This is an all things UNC football podcast with, of course, the UNC football head coach, Ed Lamb. I am Brady Hull, and we're rolling on through another week, coach. We got through an epic one last week with episode 13. Now we're in the dog days of these episodes, I think, because we're still in that mode, that in between mode, where we're building up, and we'll get more information as we progress. But it's a good thing because there's a lot of topics to go over.
I think there are. Last week seemed to me that it was kind of the culmination of spring ball,
sure,
and the off season cultural program, and then, as I mentioned last week, the players. They've got May off. That's their discretionary month. So there's still a few guys in town. I see them in the weight room, and it's great to see those guys. Overall, May for me is it's time to get the yard in shape. It's time to get the horses back in shape. A lot of landscaping work. I've got like four huge brush piles that I've got to somehow get rid of in the next few days. So a lot going on, and then when the players report back at the end of May, you know, I've got to get back to my real job.
Well, and speaking of the landscape thing, I'll just tell the side story. My wife, every year, I mean, everybody does this. They put their stuff in, their flowers, and she's a big dahlia person. So we get those in, and of course, last night, we're going to get the freeze, and, you know, it seemed like, so we're covering everything up. We got tarps all over. It looks like a circus in our backyard right now, so it never fails. Every single year we do it, it's like a day later the forecast comes in. Oh, you know what? Never mind. We're going to have a freeze, so you're going to want to cover everything up.
There's just that, you know, that I think we all, everyone that enjoys that, the gardening and the landscaping, we're so anxious to get out and get the tomatoes in the ground and get things going, the flowers, the dahlias, whatever it might be, whatever your passion is. And, yeah, I've damaged a lot of plants. And, you know, I talk to the old timers in the neighborhood or something. They're always, May 15th, you got to wait. You know,
yeah.
they know the right dates. And after danger of last frost, you know, it's on every package. And yet, you know, I've made some serious mistakes.
Yeah, we'll see today. We'll uncover everything. I think it's supposed to get kind of cold again tonight. So maybe we'll leave it on for one more night and then investigate. But we know you're a big asparagus guy. That was, you know, when your press conference, and I loved the connection you made to that. Is that the go-to, or what is your favorite thing to actually put in the garden?
Well, asparagus is cool. I talked about it in my opening press conference because of the time that it takes to get the first harvest.
Sure.
That 3-year period, and it has become a nice way for me to say, look, I'm not
building a foundation
on the next job. I'm putting asparagus in the ground right now, which means I'm planning to be here to harvest that and enjoy that. But just yesterday I was actually putting manure on the asparagus patch. Asparagus is really maintenance free for the most part. It comes up earlier than all the other weeds or whatever might come up around it. So it's just a matter of getting that nutrition to it. They like a good deep compost, or in my case, I've got the horse manure readily available.
Ready to go.
You get the good stuff,
right?
yeah, exactly. funny to think about it as the good stuff, being that I'm picking pastures every day, early in the morning or late at night. And there's a value to that, to the asparagus.
Oh yeah, I'm a big pickles guy. I like to jar pickles and do that. I didn't do it last year. I took a summer off because I love it at first, and then it just gets out of hand. And you're like, you go outside, okay, they're tiny. The very next day, well, I got to do this now, and then 2 days later, you're doing it again. So, you know, it should be fun. It's the changing of the seasons. I always look forward to it. And then about a month of that, when we start to get into the really warm weather, I'm ready to get into the fall mode. And I know part of this podcast, this has gotten me really excited, Coach, you know, just, you know, connecting with you more, connecting with this program more, just through this podcast has gotten me more pumped up for UNC football than I've ever been, you know. And I'm an alum, you know, I love UNC, the UNC Bears, but getting the inside scoop from you, I've had so many people that aren't necessarily Bears fans that have reached out and said, we just like the talking of the football, the inside scoop that you're giving us, the struggles, the positives that you go through, the rewarding stuff that you see on a daily basis, on a weekly basis. So it has become this really fascinating document of not just UNC, but Division I football.
Oh, I'm super glad to hear that. I know that there would be people that would enjoy listening to it just from a UNC football informational aspect. And I've got some players' parents that have reached out and said that they were listening. And then, but I mentioned a few weeks ago, I thought that for me, the highest aspiration would be somebody listening to it that, you know, just could relate through the football lens to things that are going on in their life or in their business. And, you know, so I try to keep that in mind as we're talking, is how do these struggles that, you know, I might be going through on a daily basis and trying to build up this team, how does that relate to, you know, my life or insight into my own life or maybe struggles that other people might be going through. And from that perspective, I've enjoyed just kind of constantly having it somewhere in my mind. It's not top of mind, you know, like I don't want to get carried away. Like, I'm not going to have gainful employment as a podcast guy, but, you know, I think it is helping me as a football coach with one more motivation to kind of be reflective about the things I'm doing.
Well, and for me as a radio guy, you know, we joked last week about the depth charts. I'm all about like the beginnings too, the base. I want to get to know the position battles. And, you know, when you and I are talking about David Afari last week in that running back room, I love that because that's now giving me a connector when the season starts. I can go back and say and think about, I've told several people that story. About you and David connecting, riding horses, him coming to you. You're wondering if he's going to enter the transfer portal, what that is. But no, he's actually coming to you saying, I got goals, coach. I'm setting these goals. And so I love that because in a few months, I'm going to think back to that. I'm going to use it for my daily show and think back to those things. And good or bad, if he's hitting those goals, if he's not hitting those goals, I'm going to be able to refer back to that and discuss it. So for me, it's a fun foundation that we're building where you can really use that as for banter on the radio or just a way for you as a coach to document, you know, from spring ball, before spring ball to where we are coming up in the fall.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so much fun to see from a player perspective, position group perspective, all these guys as they develop over the course of the year and then the years and to be able to document some of that. Really cool. You know, that you asked me about the depth chart stuff, but I mentioned I was a little, you know, caught off guard. So I don't know if you noticed, but I got ahead of you this time.
You did.
I studied a couple of position groups that I'm excited about, and I suggested that we talk about those.
I ask coaches, I ask reporters, whenever I get them on, I'm like, give me that depth chart. You go to practices and stuff at the beginning, and you're handed rosters, and love rosters, but I need depth charts. That's my big thing, but... This is fun, is being able to kind of dive into these position groups. We've spent a lot of time the last couple of weeks, I think, talking about the interior side of things, the offensive line, the defensive line. Last week, we went into the running back room. This week, we're going to look at, you know, on the offensive side of the ball, talk about the tight ends group, but also the defensive backs group. And one of the things, if you want to talk about cornerbacks too, one of the things that always sticks out to me is it seems like there's 4 million defensive backs on a football team when you look at that. So that's one of those positions. It's extremely competitive, but you know why you have to have a lot of guys on the depth chart, because these guys, I think, playing defensive back, and I love that position. That's my favorite position to watch, to learn about. I know there's so much to learn about, but you have to have a pretty full room when it comes to defensive backs on the football team.
The game has certainly changed. I can remember just in the time, you know, that I was a player, most people were playing with what we call an eight-man box, right? You're playing eight guys close to the line of scrimmage and close to the football at the snap, and the strong safety would oftentimes be just a young linebacker that maybe wasn't fully physically developed and could run fast. And now, you know, not only do we have, you know, a strong safety that has to be able to cover and as the fourth defensive back, but we oftentimes have five or six based on what the offensive personnel is on the field. You know, 25 years ago, there weren't many four wide receiver sets. There were spread sets, but you were typically spreading out one of your running backs, one of the more athletic running backs, or maybe a lighter tight end. And now, you know, it's not uncommon. We saw it several times last year where we actually faced what we call a bomber's personnel, which is no backs, no tight ends, five wide receivers. And so if you want to match up and play man-to-man, which is very much a part of our philosophy on defense, you can't do that with safeties in the game. You have to have five corners to get into that matchup ability. And, you know, there's some ways to keep a safety or two in there matched up and maybe provide them some type of help. But then, at that point, you're limited on how many guys you can rush because you're trying to drop guys into the underneath zones.
Well, and again, it's just one of those positions where, they say, coach, you have to have that short memory if you play that position, safety or flat out cornerback. But you're a lot of times you're on that island out there, and that's the position. It's we critique that one a lot because there's blown coverage there. How did that guy let? But that's not always the full story either. I mean, it could be maybe a safety blew that coverage. Maybe the linebacker was supposed to come in and play underneath, and because there was nobody underneath, the cornerback has to then go underneath, and then a guy goes over the top, and that's how that goes. So it's a chain when you look at how you can play, especially when offenses are putting several receivers out there.
Right. And interesting, just kind of side note as you're talking about that. Sometimes when you see somebody get beat, it may not be the guy that is the closest to the receiver that looks like he's getting beat. It could be somebody else that, like you say, was supposed to be over the top, or maybe there was supposed to be some underneath coverage or some help. Or a lot of times, it's the pass rush. Is the pass rush getting there? You can't give a quarterback and a receiver unlimited amounts of time.
Sure.
A football field is very, very big. And so if you're in man coverage trying to cover 53 yards of width and however many yards behind you to the back of the end zone, that's a lot of square feet out there to try to cover with an unlimited amount of time.
Coach, in man coverage, I've wondered this, and I'm glad I can ask this today. Is there like a clock, where you're telling a defensive back, you have this much time, essentially, and then if by that time we haven't done anything yet, the quarterback hasn't made a decision, we haven't got a sack or whatever, good luck. is there a clock? Is there an actual amount of time, roughly, that you estimate for a corner to say, hey, you have to lock down for this amount of time?
It's a really good thought. As coaches, we will talk about that and say, oh, that was too much time. The defensive line coach would be the first one to say that. Like if we're watching video, and we always try to figure out who the challenged player was when in the case of giving up significant yardage or we lost a play. Okay, who's the challenged player there? Was it the corner? Was it the linebacker? And what could they do better? How could we teach better? All of our corners, they do have to know where their help is by coverage. And so if you take, like zero coverage, I'm not going to give the actual cover. We go by colors it doesn't necessarily relate. But anyone that's listening, probably understands zero coverage is an all-out blitz. And in zero coverage, the help is the defensive line. And so what we do with our corners is we play a technique for zero coverage that takes into account that the ball should come out very quickly. But what I found is if you give these corners an exact time, so if you say like zero coverage, just you and I sitting here talking, mm-hmm. we might say, hey, the ball's going to come out within 2 seconds.
Wow. And is that press coverage, right, at that point? Are you pressing at that stage?
Usually zero coverage for most teams philosophically is off coverage.
Okay, it's the opposite.
But it's flat-footed. We call it cliff coverage, as in you are lined up and there's a cliff right behind you. You don't back up. Mm. The ball's coming out hot. So if it's going to be a deep route, that receiver's got to run right through you. He's got to take you off the cliff, and you're taking him with you. That kind of, like, we want that kind of visualization.
Yeah, see, my Madden stuff is just not helping me with this. I'm thinking you want to press a guy, but you're telling me, hey, no, it's going to come out quickly. So that means the receiver's probably only going to get, start their route only so many yards before that ball's coming out. So if you're pressing, then there's a chance they could beat him quickly and go deep.
Yeah, and we will leave the press and the off coverage to our players a lot. Like we'll tell them the preferred for that coverage, but we want them to really mix it up because the opponents are studying the stances, the alignments, and if we're always off in certain coverages and always pressed in other coverages, it can be a real problem. So we'll even sometimes in zero coverage, a corner would line up press and then bail right before the snap and then get on the cliff again. So there's all kinds of ways for a corner to kind of disguise that, bring their own personality. But, we generally would be more press where we have some type of established help. So if there's help like in the short underneath middle and the deep middle, That's what a lot of people would call cover one or man free. That's a really good time to be pressed because you can knock off the timing of the route, but also take away, in most cases, the outside leverage and force that receiver to kind of be to the inside and force the quarterback to throw to the open space, which looks like it's to the inside.
How have you seen – we're talking about how this safety, cornerback, that position has changed a lot. How have you seen the safety position evolve specifically? You know, you talked about how sometimes there were – back in the day, linebackers are asked to, play that safety position type deal. Now we're kind of seeing – if you're a safety, you kind of have to be both. You have to be a cornerback. You have to be a linebacker. You kind of have to know how to do both of those things, or at least certainly have that speed and then that tackling ability.
Yeah, I think it's just specialization, awareness, knowledge that's happened over time. You know, I can remember when safeties for the most part were slow corners or small linebackers. And that was kind of your – that was a dumping ground. It was,
yeah.
it was a trash dumping ground was the safeties. And that's what I played when I first went to college. I was kind of a tall, skinny, what eventually would be a linebacker. But, you know, I was too skinny to hold up in the front seven. And so I initially played safety, and I gained a little weight and quickly moved to linebacker and then eventually to defensive end. But, you know, it's not really like that anymore. You look at just the evolution of – personal trainers, and 15 years ago, there were personal trainers working with all DBs or really all skill position players. Now it's very specialized. A lot of our corners will go to corners trainers, and our safeties will go to safeties trainers. Mm. And it is. It's really different. The ability to backpedal and weave at the safety position and not overreact is so much more critical than it is at corner now, especially the way we recruit corners. We're looking for length and speed, and most of those length and speed guys maybe aren't as quick as they are fast. Those lengthy guys kind of need to be moving in a direction. So we're a press. You see us, especially when we're man-to-man coverage, we are pressed a lot of the time. We want to knock the receiver off the route, be slightly in a trail position, and then have enough speed to go and catch him. And that's why we're looking so much for the length and speed. It fits into our philosophy.
Yeah, so that was going to be my next question, kind of what is that philosophy? Who fits that the most? We'll kind of bust into some names, too. A little depth chart kind of talk, maybe the official
one. I'm prepared.
One. But, when you're looking to build that, because there are – I'm thinking, I always make connection to like the Broncos, for example. Vic Fangio was a head coach not too long ago for this team. He wanted physical corners that could tackle. Some teams you get finesse corners that are just ridiculously good in coverage, but they struggle with the tackling side of things too. Some teams will try to find the sweet spot in between. Where do you kind of sit there when you're looking at guys, when you're scouting guys? What are you looking for the most?
Yeah, I said it before, it's length and speed. And so like looking at Vic Fangio, like his philosophy and what he's known for is his quarter-quarter half system. And in the half side of that quarter-quarter half system, your corner is got to be a tackler. He's got to be a physical presence. Everything is, in terms of the short passing game or the running game, everything is being spilled out to that corner who's got a nice leverage and a nice opportunity to come and put a cap on everything. And so at least that corner in that system really has to be somebody that's willing to shed blocks and make tackles. And for us, I think it's just for everybody, it's a matter of, as a coach, which skill or which attribute you start with. And for us, it's length, speed. So, can I combine those two into one? Because to me, if it's just speed, that's not a candidate for recruiting. If it's, but it's a guy that's shorter, that's not what we're looking for in our system. We're a man press system. The highest aspiration of our defense is to be completely completely built foundationally around the ability to play man press coverage. And so we need that length speed first.
Coach, for some of these listeners maybe that aren't as familiar with when you say length, we hear that in sports all the time. In basketball, length can mean the wingspan and just those arms, and not necessarily the height, but how long are those arms? How can they block vision? Can they block basketballs? In football, when you look at length, Are you looking at height? They need to be a certain, they need to be this tall to ride this ride?
Yeah.
Or is it wingspan? Is it, you know, just talk to us a little bit about that side and what you're looking for specifically.
That's why we use the word length instead of height. Now, regardless, we're looking for 5'10". Now, here's the deal. For when you're talking to a high school player or a high school coach, we really need to say 6 foot, because when we hear that a player is 6 foot, or we read that on their profile page and then we go and meet them, they're typically 5'10".
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a natural buffer there of kind of an expected height fraud, where we know that a 6 foot guy listed will actually be 5'10", which there's corners all playing all over the NFL that are 5'10". And 5'10" is not short.
That's what gave me hope for about 4 years of my life that I was going to be in the NFL until I got to eighth grade.
And I just want to make sure here. I haven't measured you, but are you really 5'10"?
I feel
like there's
the
almost always height fraud. You know, like there, you have to just build that margin for error in. So for us, a 5'10 guy, kind of a minimum height guy, we're looking for a longer armed guy.
Is okay. So 5'10, kind of the average that you're looking for there. But then, yeah,
your minimum.
Okay, minimum.
Yeah. Most of our corners are well.
You got a lot
well
of six
above.
Footers, right?
We've got a tall, fast group of corners. Now, our job at that point, if we're looking for length, speed, you know, as opposed to Coach Fangio, if we're looking for length, speed first, we really have to develop the skill attributes of players. We have to develop the confidence to tackle. We have to develop the strength and the ability to get off blocks, because we didn't recruit that first. If we were recruiting that first, then we would be developing more of the coverage, or trying to develop somehow speed or work a system. You know, you don't need a long corner if you're playing a lot of zones,
mm-hmm.
because those corners can see they can see the ball thrown. Our corners coach, DJ Williams, was a fantastic cornerback for Utah State. I coached against him when he was playing. He's 5'7", but
wow.
You know, he could see the ball thrown, and he's incredibly quick and explosive. He's built, he's strong, like, he's very competitive. So those guys that are built like that, they need to see the ball thrown. They need to see the play develop in front of them, whereas a length speed guy can play with his back to the quarterback and have a really good opportunity to cover down.
What about the vertical stuff? You know, because if you're 5'7", if you're 5'10", even 5'10", you need to be able to also be able to make plays where that ball's not constantly going over your head. Is that a point of emphasis too? Because I know we're talking length, speed first, but how much do you look at that vertical?
Not as much for
us. Okay.
Because again, that's more for the guy who is seeing the ball in the air. So we're typically looking to get what we call in phase. We're looking to disrupt at the line of scrimmage. If you were to put our basic core philosophy and what coverage we're going to be running most of the time in a critical situation, our corners are going to be disrupting at the line of scrimmage. They're going to be finding themselves in a slight trail position. Hopefully the offensive timing is off at that point. And then we're going to try to catch up with length, speed. And if we can get in phase, we immediately want to get our eyes around and look for the ball. But that's usually not a jump ball situation as much as it is the challenge of getting back into phase.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be faster than our receivers. And that's why for us, just like we have a criteria for the length, we have a criteria for the speed. We're looking for sub-1100-meter guys. In their junior year, we want them to be 11.2 or better. You can improve at the high school age. Guys usually improve about 0.2 per second in the 100 meters. We want guys that are doing track at corner. It's not that we won't recruit, you know, shorter guys.
Sure.
It's not that we won't recruit guys that don't do track. But at corner, this is very important to us. This is what we've learned to have success with over the years.
See, that's where I lost. I had the 5'10 thing down, but the speed thing and the length, you know, that's where I lost it. Other than that, I'd probably be retired in the NFL at this point, Coach. I just didn't have the speed or the jumping or the tackling ability or any of that stuff.
Yeah, I can see it. I mean, there's a lot of people that have NFL intangibles.
Yeah, you know, it was basically the 5'10 thing. That was kind of where it ended.
I think you could consider yourself an all-pro as far as the intangibles go.
Okay, so you're saying the minimum is 5'10". What's the max? Like, is there a guy you look at and go, because I remember a former Bronco, Lenny Walls. I can't remember how tall he was, but he was an extremely tall cornerback, and everybody said he's not gonna make. I think he was like 6'4", and so, but he had an okay career, but he made it to the league, so he had a good college career. Obviously, what's that max you're looking at?
Yeah, I think the max is probably more where it starts to get into the longer guys are going to be less and less and less quick.
Sure, yeah.
You know, just as a general rule, I guess you would look at it as a sliding scale or a graph where you have a horizontal axis and a vertical axis. The amount of quickness that a 6'7 or 6'8 guy could generate as opposed to a 5'7 or 5'8 guy, it's just typically that's what you're going to see. So I think in that case we would always be interested in a sub-11, 6'5, 6'6 guy, but is their highest potential maybe at the linebacker or defensive end position, wide receiver, you know, some other position.
If you find a 6'5", 6'6 corner that can, you know, run a ridiculous 40, then you got a unicorn probably, right? You got one of those guys that's just absolutely special.
Yeah, we've had them over the years. It's not quite as much as the 6'1", 6'2 guy. That's a pretty tall corner out there.
I
think the average in the NFL, we did a study several years ago where we ran it, and it's very easy. All the information's online, but I think the average in the NFL is 5'10.5", or was at that time, however many years ago we did that. So you start to get into the 6'1", 6'2" range, you've got some really tall corners, especially if they can run like an NFL player. NFL corners are generally going to be 4'6 or better. They won't say that, but if you actually look at the combine, you can see that they're 4'6 or better. None of them will admit that they're 4'6, but that, you know, a true 4'6 on a laser time, that's going to be about a sub-11, 100 meters.
Well, let's talk about, you know, some of the guys on this roster. It used to be, you know, maybe it never was quite this way, but I would always look at the two guys, you know, who are your shutdown corners. But as you're talking about in college football, and you're seeing the NFL too, with teams spreading guys out more, that slot receiver has become so essential, so important to so many offenses. And you see guys like Tyreek Hill, they can line up all over the place. It's almost like 1 through 3 are those guys where you're really, these guys have to all three be kind of special. And 4 and 5, 6, those guys have to be pretty good too. Kind of like with any position, I suppose, but you probably want 1 through 3 all being pretty competitive, maybe almost interchangeable.
The way the depth chart's shaping up for us right now, we've got two guys with significant experience, LaDainian Osborne and Noah Mangum. And LaDainian is, you know, if we were to design a corner, height, speed, weight, strength, all of that, you really would start with LaDainian. In terms of a kind of a recruiting potential prospect, and that actually really matches the way that he's developed. You know, when we got here, he was thin, not very confident. DJ Williams, the corners coach, has worked really wonders with him in terms of getting him, okay, look, how you do one thing is how you do everything. So let's get the academic piece of this going. Let's get the weight room piece of this going. Let's get you gaining weight. LaDainian's strength has come around. He had some real flashes last year in games where he was fantastic. He's got the length. He's got the speed. He's a very fluid athlete, probably the most gifted in terms of that type of, you know, length, speed quotient that we've been talking about. Noah, this is why these guys really are two great candidates to kind of come in and lead the group as veterans. Noah is not quite as long, but he is really strong and explosive. And he's still, you know, Noah's a 5'11 corner, but, you know, muscled up. He's our heaviest corner. He's 193 pounds. Really does a nice job in all facets of the game. Plenty long and fast enough to play bump coverage, like we were talking about this length and speed. You know, he's not quite the 6 foot guy, and because he's more built physically, he doesn't look, you know, when you look at him, it doesn't look like he has the length, just because he's got more girth to him, right?
Sure.
But you know, in terms of a body composition standpoint, he's very low body fat, really, really explosive. One of our fastest guys on the team. Those two guys, their competitiveness, their desire to win, their ability to put, to have true confidence and put any losses behind them and play the next snap, an excellent two to be starting with.
Okay, so we got those guys there. Noah, He must have put on some. He must put on some muscle, some weight within the last year.
Yeah, you've heard me say it. The foundation of our program is weight room.
Sure,
and that's got to be weight room.
Again, was what I love about these. That ties back to what we spent several weeks talking about was the weight room, and I think you guys had him listed at 180 or so last year. So he's put on. He's put on the pounds. You can see if you're saying he's what 194, 192 now. He's been getting after it in the weight room.
Yeah, LaDainian too. Yeah, both of them are. You know, LaDainian at one point was in the 160s.
Oh man.
Yeah, and he's up. He's up to 179.
So he packed it on too.
Yeah, they're just. You know, I think the shock of our coaching staff and the way I do things coming into players is often like, oh my gosh, like what are we doing here in this weight room? It's human torture, right? And then, but guys don't really change how they're eating. And so they've got all this damage to their muscles. They've got all this caloric, they've got all these caloric needs, but they're not taking care of it. And so typically what we see is the body weight drop initially because guys are, you know, they're picking up their caloric expenditure, but they're not taking care of the dieting part. And then that's why we weigh every single day. First thing our players do when they come in the weight room is weigh. And so we have this chart and we are on it. We talk about the body weights in a public accountability meeting every week. I'm talking about the players that are gaining weight. I'm talking about the players that are losing weight. I'm talking about the progress made towards goals, target body weights. And so as guys start to get their mind around and see the actual change in their strength because of the way they're eating, because the training they're going to do. The eating, we can't really force that. You know, we can sit with them at training table. We can encourage it. But at some point, it's got to be their decision. But once they see, hey, when I eat a little bit more because of this training, I'm getting stronger and faster and quicker, it becomes kind of addicting to them. And that's what both of these guys have done a really nice job of.
I wish that was my problem there, Coach, because I love to eat and that's fun for me, but I don't see the same results.
All you got
to
do is come start training with the boys.
Might last about 4 seconds, yeah, maybe.
Your
we'll
caloric
see.
Expenditure is going to go up.
All right, so can I ask this question? And you again, this can be a no comment, but number one receiver, you're going up against whatever team, who's on that guy? Or does it change?
That would change.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's why it's so nice. If you look at LaDainian and Noah, and really I feel like we have six guys right now that we feel like can match up with anyone, right? I don't want to talk about some of those other guys too, but you know, I think in terms of LaDainian and Noah, because they both have enough length, we wouldn't be inclined a lot of times to follow a receiver.
Okay. Okay.
But if there was a a smoother, more fluid receiver that was trying to kind of time up jump balls, LaDainian would probably be, you know, the smoother matchup. If it was a more physical, shifty, you know, like Braden Monroe is very powerful. Braden Monroe changes direction, and like I'm surprised that the cleat doesn't blow out more often, right? And that's in that case, you want Noah because Noah can really match that in terms of side to side quickness.
So are they more or less guarding a side of the field, like you said, following the receivers around?
When you got guys like we do with these two guys, I think you definitely would want to lean towards staying on their own side of the field, because if we're following receivers around, it's already much more taxing physically to play defense than it is offense.
Sure. Yeah, you're already –
And the offense can dictate when they substitute, right? And so defensively, you have to be on that and match it really quickly. So defense is more taxing. So to actually, you know, to – in between plays, follow a receiver, not just during a play, can be a little bit of a detriment. If we have to do that or in critical situations, we would do that. But if these two guys are on the field, and several of our other guys too, I would say can match up against anybody, and we would rather keep them on the right side and left side, or maybe field and boundary if we were playing that type of defense.
That's such a great point too. I mean, they're already, you know, putting a lot of energy out there before the play even starts. The other one too, Coach, how much can be said about a corner just getting to know that side of the field more? Because you are lining up one way and you line up a different way if you're on the other side. That's got to be a benefit there, because you do hear a lot of these shutdown corners, they usually just kind of, they lock down one side, and you can say, well, no, nobody's going to that side of the field.
Yeah. They're guys that have a preference, and we want to take that into account. I mean, there's no use trying to put guys in an uncomfortable situation once the game gets here. I think in practice, we want to times we want to really attack. If we're more comfortable in press, we want to play a little more off in practice. If we're more comfortable in off, we want to play a little more press. If we're more comfortable on the right side, well, let's rep them over on the left. And I think there's greater overall development position efficiency when we do that. But once the game gets here, really, as coaches, it's our job to put these guys in the best position to be successful. And a lot of times that has to do with their comfort level.
So we talked a little bit about Osborne. We talked about Noah Mangum. Give us a list of some of these other guys too that you expect. Hey, they could go out there if we need them. They have a good shot at going up against some, you know, the 1, 2, 3 receivers.
Yeah, we got two more guys who got some significant experience last year. One of them's Nate Gillis, who came with us from BYU and transferred over when we came here. Nate's a big physical corner. He's probably our best. I want to say best tackler, but there are other guys certainly who are as good at the tackling. Nate's kind of the most courageous. Nate will hit you with his eyes open and his face up. And that's kind of like, it's almost creepy to watch him play the physical part of the game sometimes. Yeah. Like, hey, man, you're enjoying this part of the game more than you should. You're very, very comfortable with the contact part of the game. When he sees the ball coming at him, there's just no backing down. There's no finesse to it. There's no, you know, where's my help? Is anybody else going to get there before I am? He's going to go straight to the ball, and he's going to make an eyes-open tackle. Darren Mercer came to us as a developmental player, junior college guy from Citrus College last year. And Darren, another big physical. Nate and Darren are, you know, on the field, those guys look about the same. You got about a 5'11 and a half, 6 foot guy that both about running about 190 pounds, big arms, big quads, really built guys. And then, you know, and those two guys, they can come in at any time. We feel like they look, run, and act like veteran, capable corners. You know, a lot of times when you put a young corner in a game or a new corner in the game, the offensive coordinator up in the box and the quarterback, they see it right away. Mm. Like, wait a minute, that guy doesn't look developed. He doesn't look tall enough. He doesn't look fast enough. He doesn't have enough swag in his uniform. I mean, they're just going to go right at anything that they see. And that's the thing about these top four guys, especially. Like, they're physically built. They're physically mature. They've got the length. And, you know, you wouldn't know this. I think sometimes you can look at a guy and tell whether he's likely to have speed. But they, all these four guys that I've talked about, they look the part and they definitely have the ability to win, to be winning players at our level.
We have some time to talk about the safety side of things too, Coach. You want to go into that today?
You try to surprise me. Yeah. Oh,
we can do that because I know I want to get into the tight end group too.
We got two more. I'll bring some safety information on the next one if that's all right.
You're like,
with
come
you.
On,
I
man.
Be clear.
You want more
this
every
is
time?
Your show.
Yeah,
I
mean, no.
It's only becoming more and more clear. This is your show. You're the host, and I'm the guest.
This
and
is so, for me.
You can push me around all you want.
This whole thing is just so I can predict the games. And I could be the guy that's like, I told you this was going to be the starting corner. That's what this whole plan was about, Coach.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, we're well on the path. There's two younger players, Kamari Owens and Caleb Kwame, who really have all the tools. They're exactly what we were looking for in the recruiting process. So, you know, just to be clear, LaDavion and Noah, they were here when we got here, recruited by the previous staff. Great job by the previous staff. Excellent corners. Big sky potential, NFL potential. Love these two guys. We brought in Nate and Darren as two veteran guys, one of them JC, one of them a transfer, because we felt like we needed some depth, some immediate depth that could help us. And they both played in games last year and did a good job. And then in our recruiting efforts, we've got Kamari Owens and Caleb Kwame, who they fit. That's the 6 foot guy. That's the sub 11, 100 meters. And now, if you're a corner in high school and you're 6 foot and you're sub 11, and you're not going to a Power Five school, it's because you're probably not developed yet physically as a player, or just football's new to you. And in Caleb's case, it's kind of the extreme. He never played high school football. We recruited him from the rugby field. Well, initially we saw his track time. You know, I think he was 10-8 as a junior, and we saw his track time, and then we went and watched him play rugby, and we said, "This is what we want." And so, his story is as much of an illustration as you could possibly ask for into, okay, well, what's your recruiting philosophy in terms of defensive backs and especially corners? It's Caleb Kwame. We are taking a total flyer, a complete risk on a guy. When I say, hey, we're looking for length speed first, I mean, how many good high school corners did we pass up the chance to recruit to go and find Caleb Kwame? Colorado kid. He's got the length speed. He's got right now the length speed to play in the NFL. Now we got to teach him how to play football.
Was it Brighton? Is it Brighton? Is that where he went?
Yes.
Oh, I'll be paying attention to that. Another good note I'm going to take down here. Caleb Kwame, so I'll be looking out for him, Coach. Well, that's fascinating. It's a fun position for me to talk about. I had a former corner, Chris Harris Jr., on the show a couple weeks ago. And he's, you know, I said, hey, because he's wanting to get into broadcast. I said, wouldn't that be great if in TV we had an option where we could just do a corner cam? And he said, that's what I'm actually pushing for. That would be my favorite thing to watch. I worry that I would lose sight of everything else, but, you know, regular fans are watching the football. That's where we're going. But I just think seeing corners play and then watching these different coverages would really be fascinating. So that's we'll put that idea out there, Coach. I need your backing.
Well, I'm a defensive backs coach. That's what I came up – most of my career I've been coaching defensive backs, and that's why I don't really enjoy watching football on the television is because so often the defensive backs are just completely cut out of the action until the ball gets thrown their way or ran their way.
It's really hard to learn more about football unless you have access to the film that you guys are seeing.
Yeah, what we call the All 22.
Yeah.
I mean, all 22 players on the field.
Can I get access to that, Coach? Can we talk about that?
Or yeah, actually, I mean, you can. We can give you our links, but
I'm pressing my luck today.
That's one of the cool things about all the television channels available now with the subscriptions is most of the big games now have an all 22 option.
Yeah, I hope that grows more and more so we get those options for everybody. Do we want to move on, talk a little tight ends?
Sounds good.
On the side of things, of course, tight end coach Spencer Patterson. What's your relationship like with Spencer? I know you brought him up a couple of times.
Yeah. Spencer and I worked on the same staff at BYU for several years. That's where I got to know him. We did have some mutual friends. The president at Southern Utah that hired me, Mike Benson, then moved on and became the president at Eastern Kentucky while Spence was a graduate assistant there at Eastern Kentucky. So a couple of – you know, we had some mutual friends in the business, and so I knew of him kind of before we linked up as peers at BYU. And then just – I was always impressed with the work ethic and professionalism that he had when he was at BYU. And so he was a guy that I always had on my radar. If I got a head coaching opportunity, he would be a guy that I would look at as a coach with a really bright future.
Okay. I'm glad you could take us there for a moment. The tight end position, so many different teams use the tight ends in different ways. Yeah. You look at some of these high-flying offenses and the tight end, they kind of want, hey, you're almost a receiver. You're pretty good at blocking, but you're a receiver kind of first. And then there's other offenses that say, hey, if you're not blocking, you know, that, and some guys just, they live for that. That's what they want to do. Where does the tight end fit into your offense? How do you view a tight end? And we'll get into kind of what you're looking for when you're scouting these guys.
Well, this is going to be cool because I continue to kind of put myself out there, right? Like I'm the head coach of a team that went winless last year. And to hear me talk about our corners, like, the NFL potential, the ability to match up with anybody. Like, why is this guy so excited? Well, it's development, right? Like, our corners really shined at times last year, but they're different guys right now because of the player development, because of that weight room. The tight end room could not be more different, and it's three guys that we had in the program that have just really I always talk about our defensive line being so bought in. These three guys are at the very top of the team in terms of their buy-in for community service, weight room, academics. Three really, really guys that have put themselves out there as leaders. First one, Fisher Clements. He, when we got here, he was in the low 240s. He's 265 now. Mm-hmm. He's 6'6".
And he was one of those guys that was here.
Hands.
He was here before you got recruited.
By the previous staff. Such a conscientious young man. He's just in every facet of life. Just really enjoy being around Fisher. Fisher is I compared him immediately to a tight end we had at BYU, Isaac Rex, who caught a ton of touchdowns. I think caught like 11 touchdowns as a freshman or something like that.
Wow.
Or maybe between his freshman and sophomore year. But I can't remember the exact number. But he was just a touchdown machine because he was so long. And that's kind of Fisher. Like, he's easy to underestimate his speed because he's at 6'6". He's got these really long strides. He's got enough speed to get open, but he just catches everything. His hands are so good and so smooth. He's just, we say he's always open because of the height. And then another kind of veteran guy that was here, Charlie Garrison. Charlie's has been a little bit more of our blocking tight end. He at 6'4" and 255 pounds, but he's just bulkier. You know, Fisher's longer. Fisher's all of 6'6", maybe more. And Charlie's probably just at 6'4.5", 6'5". And so packing on a similar amount of weight, he's just a bigger, stronger, you know, thicker type of athlete. He's got speed. He doesn't have that kind of length speed where he's kind of smoothing in and out of routes. He's more of an explosive speed. And Charlie can be underestimated big time in his ability to catch passes, and something we want to get him more involved in this year than last. Last year, he was our guy that you could count on to come in and be physical and block. And then we moved a receiver, Cash Cheeks, to tight end. Cash was a good receiver for us. We liked him at receiver. We just thought he had NFL potential as a tight end. And so he went from 208 pounds to now 239 pounds.
Wow.
And his goal is to be at 245 for training camp. So really excited about Cash. He had a little bit of a just quad strain that was nagging him throughout the spring and didn't quite play the role that we thought he would. Charlie's kind of our warrior, and Fish had a little bit of a shoulder, and Cash had a little bit of a quad, like I said. And so Charlie ended up just kind of grinding through every day. And that's – I think everybody on the team has a really high respect for Charlie. He's the guy that will not only go in there and do the dirty work, but just be ready every day to go. He's kind of a – he's a work truck mentality guy.
I love the tight end position too is interesting because, you know, I've interviewed a lot of tight ends. And I've had those guys on where I say, hey, what's better for you, catching a touchdown pass, finesse type? I'll get some of these guys that are like – I like just driving a guy out of bounds. You know, once that whistle, I'm still going, I'm pushing. Some guys they love that contact, and having a couple of those guys that seek it out, but also having, don't want to say finesse in a negative way, but also having that receiver type tight end. I mean, that's when you got to say, hey, you got the total package at that position.
Yeah. If I were to kind of put, I'm going to take a guess here that when Charlie thinks about making the big play, it's blocking somebody through the back of the end zone for the winning touchdown. And that's only because we asked him to do that. Mm. I think that's what type of selfless person he is. He's a team guy. And I think, you know, I think they all want to catch the game winning touchdown. That's their dream. But I think in Charlie's case, just that desire to really follow through and do the thing that's asked in a tough minded way, that just appeals to him. Fish is a guy, you know, everybody wants to catch a touchdown, and Fisher Clemens had an amazing touchdown catch against Weber State last year where he went up over the defender, kind of almost like a Dwight Clark, the catch from Joe Montana back in the 80s. It was like this ball looked like it was being thrown away by Serm out of the back of the end zone to avoid a sack, and Fish goes up and snags it from 11 feet off the ground, right? And then comes down and gets a foot down in bounds and kind of one hands the finish of the catch because the DB was draped on him. But I think that's Fish, is like the big play for him, the one that we expect him to make, maybe the one he dreams about, is just that tough catch. Like, how did you do that?
Yeah.
You know, he seems to have a real knack for just concentration through the end of the play and finishing the catch, even if the coverage is as good as double coverage. There was in the spring game, he was double covered on an over route. And I thought I was standing behind the quarterback to try to be an extra whistle, protect the quarterback in the spring game. And I thought when the quarterback threw it, I was like, what are you doing? Mm. It's double coverage. And yet Fish just went up and just caught it right in traffic. You know, I think there were three guys that touched the ball and Fish came down with it, you know.
And that, I mean, that has to just get you excited, man.
Yeah.
I mean, when you have a play that you're saying, hey, why is the ball? Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, double coverage.
Exactly.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong. I know there were a lot of players at your opening press conference, Coach, but Fisher Clements was there. And I believe he reached out even to us here at the station and gave us kind of this awesome assessment of what he was sticking around for to see, you know, wanted to hear what you had to say and all this stuff. So he's one of those players that seems like he bought in pretty quickly.
He did. And, you know, for me, I love to look at the roster at a time like this when I've been here now a little over a year and what kind of, you know, kind of make a decision. Okay, what kind of impact have I had on each one of these players? And it's kind of a selfish, egotistical way to kind of look at things, but I see it as my job to have this, you know, to be able to inspire them, to be able to mentor them. And, you know, I really, in the case of a guy like Fish, I really think he's one of those guys that whoever the coach was, whoever came in, he would pour all of his trust and all of his energy into whatever the message was and then see if it works later. And there's, you know, some guys just aren't that way. I'm personally not that way. I mean, my first inclination is to be a little bit skeptical and, you know, I'm looking for proof a lot of times. And I think Fish, whether that's just him naturally or whether that was the way he was raised, you know, he was just one of those first guys to say, I'm all in, you know, just with his actions, not with his words, just with his actions. You can see it every day.
All right, you got to love guys like that. Yeah. I mean, you like you said, not everybody's built that way. But if you have a decent, you know, chemistry that you're trying to build up, that culture, you're going to have a few of those guys, and you need those guys to be the leaders of your team, both on the field and off the field. So what are we looking at? How many two tight end sets are we running, Coach? What does that look like? Who's out there? But when it's one tight end out there, who's that guy? Is it Fish?
Oh, those guys are all going to play. I don't think we'll be in a lot of one tight end sets.
Okay.
I think we'll be in more three tight end sets than we are one tight end sets.
So you're going to see these guys a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that was – as one of the reasons, you know, that with Jamari's decision to transfer, you know, not only were there some receivers stepping up that he was competing with for touches, but he could see us playing a lot of two backs and a lot of two tight ends and even some three tight end sets. And so Jamari had come to me during spring camp and said, hey, where are all the touches going? You know, we're running the ball more. The quarterback's even getting involved in the run game now. You've got three tight ends sometimes.
Yeah, that's
– and, yeah, all due respect, yeah, these guys have earned their way on the field. We're putting them in there for a reason. We're not shying away from that.
Now, let's go back last year. How much of that did you do last year? And is this a byproduct, I guess, of you love these tight ends where you're willing to kind of mold this offense a little bit around those guys?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's they're earning it. I mean, you know, Cash is a real weapon. I talked about the other guys and their kind of dream big play. Cash's would still be more receiver-like, I think, but he's a very willing blocker, and he's finding that increased strength. Great story about him and his brother. We'll talk about his brother, Carver Cheeks, too, one of our starting safeties coming out of spring practice. But, you know, those guys over the holiday break back in December, I got a text from Cash saying, hey, Coach, can I come over and get some protein, you know, some mass gainer, which is something that we provide for the guys on a daily basis and more of an individual serving. But if on a break, we'll send them home with a whole bag, you know. And so I said, yeah, sure. When can you meet me? He said, well, I have to come up tomorrow. And I was like, wait, are you at home in Colorado Springs? He said, yeah, I'm you know, but I'll drive up there. I'm like, wait, you're going to drive 4 hours for some mass gainer?
Mm.
And part of this was I felt out of touch because I was sitting with one of our coaches and I'm like, hey, Cash wants to drive all the way up here to get two bags of mass gainer for him and his brother. Like, that's awesome, but how expensive is mass gainer? Is it like, are they going to lose money on gas?
Yeah. And, yeah.
I know they're losing money on time, right? And my coach was like, he was a little bit of a younger coach. He's like, Coach, that's like, you know, that's like 50 or 60 bucks like for the good stuff for a bag. And so I thought, oh, okay. But what an indication that these guys are bought in. They drove up here 4 hours. And then when they got here, I met them over in the weight room and distributed their mass gainer. And I was like, So you guys hanging around for a couple of days? You're going to visit some of the other players that stick around town? Like, no, we're headed right back.
Headed right back home.
Just came up here for some mass gear. Like, hey, man, it's starting to work. I'm seeing the signs. We are getting there as a team. And two great examples right here. Guys,
coach,
buying in.
Yeah, that's dedication. That's when they're taking their workout seriously, their intake seriously, and that's got to excite you.
Yeah, so exciting. Two great guys. And so, yeah, in terms of those tight ends, those three guys, you're going to see them a ton. I think you'll see them rotate freely, and I'm making it sound here like, you know, like Charlie's more of a blocker than a catcher, and I think I'm more describing what they have been and kind of where they've bought in first and maybe where they've experienced their first success. But I want to be clear that all three of these guys, they block, they run, and they catch.
Well, that's kind of what I'm gathering, you know, these last 15 minutes or so is there's guys that certainly have their strengths, but at the same time, they're not opposed to doing a little bit of everything. And
yeah,
I think
absolutely.
That's got to feel like a bonus with this group.
I'm putting myself out there. I understand that. Again, like we haven't won a game since I've been here as a coach. And here I am talking about our offensive and defensive line being our strength. I like our quarterbacks and their ability to you know, move the ball with their arm and their feet. I got corners that I'm telling you can play in the NFL. I got three tight ends. Like, so anyone that's out there listening that's more skeptical, like my nature, say, hey, like coach, like at what point are you going to actually win with all these players that you're saying are the best in the league? Well, it's coming.
I'm looking forward to it. I cannot wait, Coach. Absolutely. We got a few minutes left here. Do we want to talk a little bit about the Arc of Weld County and what you guys have coming up with this No Limits camp that we've talked about briefly in the first couple of shows, kind of just previewing it, and then we got into spring. But that's coming up, next month in June?
I do, yeah. And you and I have a soft spot with our sons and their needs. I used to use the phrase special needs more. And Jen Lieber is one of the counselors on campus at UNC. And she actually had, when I first talked about putting on this football camp for special needs children, she said, well, how about we use the phrase no limits? And I think a lot of it's like political correctness, but let's be clear, like language, the meaning of words changes over time. And I think it's really important that that we recognize that these kids are, you know, like maybe better words are differently abled, or maybe we should not put any limitations on them. So
sure.
This no limits camp, that's what it's about. It's we have other sports. It's June 20th, by the way, so coming up. You can find information about registration at the Arc of Weld County homepage. Lori Couch is one of the main organizers. She really it was my idea to have the camp, but I got to give all the credit to Lori in terms of like the organization, the vision, the expertise to actually pull this thing off. And she she's a development officer for the Arc of Weld County, and so they do a really good job. We don't have our football page link up yet for registration, but the Arc of Weld County has information on their events page. But yeah, it'll be June 20th, and it is about football skills development camp. And we train our players to be adaptive and, okay, let's take a look at each one of these campers and find out what their abilities are. And let's provide a football experience for them. We have other sports. The volleyball team, the UNC volleyball team does a great job. The basketball team. There's not a lot of sports that are on campus or have people around, but the soccer team is helpful to us as well. And there are several just kind of random athletes from the UNC athletic department. We want them to kind of – like we want the volleyball team to come in and maybe teach some volleyball skills, but we don't want to lose sight of the fact that this is a football camp because
sure.
That's a sport that oftentimes for the disabilities community is – that sport is ignored. And I don't know. I don't know why. I could guess why maybe there's not a lot of football opportunities, but we want to make sure that this stays a football camp. We want it to be carnival style, a bunch of different stations, and we love to have the other sports involved, but we want to make sure that these kids come out of here with a football jersey, a football experience, and something that they can take with them. I think that just like I think horses are empowering to kids, all kids, but especially kids with disabilities because it's such a big animal. Football is a big, violent sport, and I think if some of these kids can get their mind around doing some football skills, it's very empowering for them.
Oh, and I think you mentioned, too, like a lot of the fun stuff that goes around. Like you said, it's kind of carnival style where they're running through the tunnel and yeah. stuff like that. Yeah. Guys are cheering them on, and you know, obviously some that might – if that bothers them or whatever, they go do something else.
Yes.
You guys have, I think, you know, the plan is you fit this. So it's there's something for everybody because not everybody's challenge or struggle is the exact same.
That's right. And we specifically train our players to adapt off of the abilities of these young kids. Okay, so what are they interested in? What are they showing interest? Learn to read their body language. And then, yeah, if they want to run through the tunnel 12 times, Eddie Gonzalez is he's our MC.
He'll be my child, by the way.
He'll announce them 12 times. And let's do it.
Yeah.
I'd love to have him out.
Yeah.
And, but if, you know, if they want to stick and move to each different station, let's do that. And if they're looking, like last year, we had a couple that kids that they wanted to like play a game and be tackled. Okay, well, let's go over and work on this tackling drill here and let's put a little small-sided game together.
I love that, Coach. I think that's so special too, because again, having so many different avenues that these kids can go to, because I think you and I've talked about this, you know, when you first get a diagnosis, I was told right off the bat from a doctor, hey, if you've met one kid on the spectrum, so I'm talking autism, then you've met one kid, mm-hmm. you know, because all these other kids are totally different. They have different strengths, different struggles that they're working on, whatever. And boy, is that not true? That's been my experience for sure.
I love that statement. I've heard it before, and it has resonated with me so many times. You know, I'll oftentimes meet another autistic child, and a lot of times because my son is so severe, and it's kind of obvious with the fact that he has no language, and you know his body is tensed up, and you can see the, you know, the anxiety and the fact that he's kind of moving around all the time and in his own world, I guess it would be the way to say it. If I meet another autistic kid that is kind of like speaking or able to have somewhat of a conversation with me, or able to kind of sit quietly and look normal, in quotations,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
And look normal. My first inclination is so often to think, oh, he doesn't quite have the same struggles, or this child doesn't have quite the same struggles, or this parent doesn't have quite the same struggles that we do. And then almost invariably, the more I would get to know these individuals, it's just different challenges.
Yeah.
And it's not really greater or lesser. That's the wrong way to look at it, because some of these kids that are maybe, you know, more capable of conversation or action or thought, well, they're more capable of getting into trouble or danger too.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think there's just really an eye-opening experience for those of us that are, you know, are in that world. Initial reaction versus actually being a little more educated on it.
Well, and what I love about this camp too, and events similar to this, is it's great for the kids, obviously, but it's also an opportunity to educate too. I mean, you're talking about your players; they're going to learn a little bit about, okay, what are these kids' interests, what are their needs for today, and then they walk away with that for the rest of their life, and they treat people. That's what I've noticed in the past. You know, with my kid, he is 6 years old. We go to the pool all the time. We go to events all the time. And you can just tell the kids or the adults or the teenagers that have been raised to go, hey, there are people that have differences, maybe certain struggles, and that's okay. I can tell the difference right off the bat when there's little kids coming up and they don't ask any questions. Like, why is he doing that? They're just playing right with him.
Yeah.
And I think that is so important in this day and age. That's why I love the idea of these kind of camps, because it's also educational.
It sure is for our players, and that's I think that's the main reason to do it. Like, why this context? You and I are involved in the autism community, and so yeah, we're gonna be involved in a lot of different events, and we're gonna be supportive and giving what we can to that community. Well, why is this football camp appropriate? Why would our players be involved in it? Well, you know, I never want to lose sight of the fact that I'm an educator. You know, I work for the university. I work for the taxpayers of this state, right? And I think football is co-curricular. I think that there are life lessons to be learned that probably transcend any single class that these guys are taking. And yeah. I think that the ability to take a real look at the disabilities community and the children for our players to be exposed to that is one of the most educational opportunities that they could have.
Well, that's coming up, getting close to about a month away, the No Limits Camp on Thursday, June 20th, 9 o'clock to 11:30. If you go to their website, arcweldcounty.org, just find their events page, click it, scroll down, follow the days, and just find June 20th, and there's an opportunity to register or to just get involved, too. Maybe there are business owners, there are individuals that maybe don't have necessarily those experiences, but they want to get involved and they want to support you. So there's opportunities there too.
We had some really good support last year, and we're hoping we can duplicate that again this year. We were able to provide, you know, a football feeling jersey, not a camp T-shirt. This was a jersey type material, and we've even got one better than that this year to give away. So a lot of nice support led to a really good camp last year. We're hoping to pull off, make it even better.
Yeah. Coach, I'm looking forward to seeing how that goes. And of course, Arc of Weld County too, and what they do for this community. Episode 14, pretty much in the books, Coach. We covered a lot of ground today. I love it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for your efforts. As always, we did cover a lot of ground. We didn't quite get to the pressure and release.
Oh,
but
we did.
I think it's appropriate next week, as well. I think it's just one of those things that I had, a realization that I had that very much applies to what we're going through with our team.
I spent too much time trying to pick your brain about
the
depth chart for the cornerbacks.
That's your deal.
That's my deal. Well, the tight end one's going to be pretty easy, man. Everybody. You know, that's what I'm going to be looking for. Coach, always appreciate you. But yes, we'll write that down in the notes next week to get into the press release training. Yeah. And then we'll probably break into some other position groups as well.
Sounds great.
All right, Coach, we'll catch up with you next week.
Thank you.